Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Ben Bernanke went to Wyoming, and all we got was a lousy speech. What the Fed chairman had to say about the economy coming up on the broadcast today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the last day of August 2012, the most boring month in economic history. I think we can safely say it's good to have you with us. All right, I kid, but only a little bit. I mean, what does it say that the lead story today is a Federal Reserve conference in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, of all places? Actually, it is kind of a big-ish story. Here to help explain why and what else happened in the 5 days gone by is Felix Salmon. He blogs for Reuters when he's not off on vacation, I guess, Felix, and our New York Bureau Chief, Heidi Moore. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Felix, what happened at this conference? Ben Bernanke, the speech in Wyoming today, very prestigious Federal Reserve conference. Felix, what did he say?
Yeah, he was talking about quantitative easing and talking about Milton Friedman and how all of these right-wingers would really have supported him, and he's done lots of good, and there are millions more jobs in the economy thanks to what he's done. It was quite a defensive speech. He was basically saying, we're doing okay, and we'll do more of it.
Didn't he also say, though, Heidi, that, or well, he didn't actually say this because he never actually says anything. He said, he implied they're going to do more to stimulate the economy.
Yes, he did imply that. And actually, very much to your point, you know, Queen Elizabeth I used to have a saying, video et taceo, which is I see and say nothing.
Wow, okay.
And that's pretty much Bernanke's motto, I think. He was saying that the Fed could take unusual measures. There was a note of preparation for threat in that. And he also acknowledged that the Fed is overburdened right now. They have bought so much out of the market, so many bonds and things like that, that they're actually, they may be a threat of affecting investor confidence, that the Fed is too big a player in the stock market right now.
Okay, but the market today loved what the Fed had to say, at least for a while, right, Felix?
The market was halfway to the beach, I think, frankly. I don't think you can really pay too much attention to what the market does on a Friday before Labor Day. I think the market would love to see the Fed coming in and buying lots of bonds because the market always loves it when people are buying. You know, and there was definitely hints that he would do that. And we hope that he will do that, but he should have done that months ago. I don't know why he's waiting so long.
Yeah. One guy who was not there, Heidi, was Mario Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank. Is that because Europe is now about to burst into our consciousness again and he's got his hands full?
Yes, Mario can't come out and play because he has to finish his homework, which is to save Europe. And that's what Bernanke's waiting for. Honestly, like, our economy has its own problems, but we know that if Europe catches fire, if their economy catches fire, it changes everything for us. And everyone has to kick into gear. The Fed has said that it won't save Europe, but who knows? I mean, we might have to, you know, take care of Europe's problems as they affect America. And that's what Bernanke's holding out for.
And he actually, Bernanke said that quite explicitly. He said there were three things holding the U.S. economy back, and probably the biggest one was Europe.
Right. All right, so let's get to that cut of Mitt Romney from last night. He made this long speech.
Dreams, risk.
Yeah, well, hang on. Here we go. Here's what he said, just in case you missed it the first time. Here we go.
That's what this president doesn't seem to understand. Business and growing jobs is about taking risk, sometimes failing, sometimes succeeding, but always striving. It's about dreams. Usually it doesn't work out exactly as you might have imagined.
All right, Felix, do Americans want risk in a president?
Well, the Republicans don't, because when the president supported a clean energy company which went bust, they thought that was the worst thing that he'd ever done.
Right, Solyndra, you know, of course.
With Solyndra. I think this is standard political pablum. There's absolutely nothing in that that the current president, Obama, would disagree with. And so that's the bit which puzzled me. He said this is what Obama doesn't seem to understand. Of course Obama understands that this is what causes growth. And what you're trying to do as president is create the preconditions for people to be entrepreneurial and create businesses and create jobs. The only disagreement is how best to do that.
Right. So Heidi, quickly now, since we will not speak until after President Obama's speech next week, what will the president be able to say about the economy?
I think the president, if he's smart, will talk about stability. We'll talk about how people want something rock solid. You know, Mitt Romney hears risk as reward because he's a Wall Street guy. He's an investor. Yeah. But the country is tired of struggling. Yes, we take risks as a country, but a lot of people just want some stability.
Context. Yeah. All right. Heidi Moore, she runs our New York Bureau, and Felix Salmon, he blogs for Reuters. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. On Wall Street today, as I said, traders really liked Ben Bernanke's speech until they didn't like it, you know. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Being middle class in this country has a fairly broad, if well understood, definition. Making a certain amount of money, owning a home, getting a college education, maybe. Today, though, in a sign of just how much things are changing, the Pew Research Center is out with a study of what people think it takes to be middle class. And the main requirement is just having a steady job. Marketplace's Amy Scott has that story.
What does it take to be middle class? Most people, nearly 90%, say a steady job, according to Pew. Owning a home, a college education, investments, much less important. Wendy Wong wrote the study. She says 12% of people who describe themselves as middle class have lost a job or been laid off in the past year.
So it's not really something only happened to people who are poor. That's why job security is something they have on their mind.
But here's what's really changed. 30 years ago, 70% of people in a Time CNN survey said owning a home was key to a middle-class lifestyle. In the Pew study, just 45% say home ownership is essential. Wong says after the housing bust, a home may even be seen as a burden. Dennis Gilbert studies the middle class as a professor at Hamilton College. He says people's priorities have changed.
They just recognize that you're not going to be able to have a home and a college education, some of these other things, if you don't have money to do it. And getting money to do it has become much more dicey than it was in the past.
And that's shaken people's confidence, which on its own can be damaging. Timothy Smeeding directs the Institute for Research on Poverty at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
The idea of safety and security is really called into question.
If a good job is the ticket to the middle class, it's getting harder to come by. A new study from the National Employment Law Project says most of the jobs lost during the recession were mid-wage jobs. Most of those added in the recovery pay much less. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
On the theme of jobs, I saw something this week that grabbed me, a study that said millennials, that is 18 to 30-year-olds, change jobs about every 2 years. So we did a little crowdsourcing on our Facebook page. We asked you to tell us how long you worked at your last job and why you left.
I was at my previous job for 18 months and left because I was bored.
My last job lasted 19 years till my boss closed the office. Now I'm unemployable because I'm 60-something years old.
9+ years. I left in part because the boss's daughter was a pain in the butt and I didn't want to be at the mercy of a 16-year-old.
Nobody does. Tell us your stories. Just go to our Facebook page. Lego reported results today. Sales are up almost 25% over last year. The secret behind its success? Girls. And a new line called Lego Friends. Same blocks, new look, flowers, a beauty salon, and a lot more pink. Sally Herships has more.
If you're a fan of Lego and you've seen the company's new Lego Friends toys, you may be wondering, what's with all that purple and pink?
Those are colors that girls like.
Greg Livingston is COO of Curiosity Advertising. The company specializes in kids and families.
Kids are very good at telling you what they like and what they don't like.
Seems like Lego is listening. So far this year, 27% of Lego sets purchased have been for girls. Last year, it was less than 10%. Livingston says since construction toys, like Legos, have traditionally been a tough sell to girls, it makes sense the brand would try to expand in a stereotypical way.
superheroes do skew more boys, and it does that not just as kids, but as adults. You know, young adults, you know, the 20 to 35-year-old group, superhero movies, there are more boys that go to it than girls.
The Toy Industry Association says the toy market generates $21.2 billion a year in sales, and LEGO says it researched its new toys for years. But there's been some consumer pushback against LEGO's friends.
I don't think that they're sexist.
Shad Foos works with C3, a marketing and product development company that makes toys. He says stereo and gender types exist in the toy business for a reason.
I honestly think it's good business. You know, they're not going to make it if it's not going to sell, right?
And Livingston says when it comes to toys, boys will be boys, but girls are more likely to play with toys made for both sexes. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
A correction from the broadcast yesterday. We were talking about Pandora, the internet music service, and royalty payments. And we got the royalties that satellite radio pays for the music it uses wrong. Sirius XM does pay a small percentage of its revenue in royalties to performers and songwriters. Coming up,
I feel like it has a double meaning as a song that really pokes fun at a lot of the tropes of the wealthy.
Korean pop music and social commentary. I know, weird, right? But first, let's do the numbers. Well, by the time the ups and downs were over, the Dow Industrials had added an even 90 points, not quite 0.75%. The final reading on the blue chips, 13,090. The NASDAQ rebounded 18 points, a bit more than a half percent, 3,066 the number. The S&P 500 tacked on 7 points, a half of 1%, 1,406 at the close. The week may have ended on a positive note, but overall stocks saw their second straight weekly decline. The Dow slipped a half percent since Monday. The NASDAQ off a 0.1%. The S&P 500 down nearly a third of 1% for the week. It was, however, a winning month, especially for the NASDAQ. It gained more than 4% in August. I wonder how that happened. This may be tough to face for Facebook shareholders. The stock hit a new low today, slipped another 5% down to $18 a piece. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note slipped to 1.55%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. President Obama is scheduled to travel to Louisiana to survey the damage from Hurricane Isaac. September is National Chicken Month, to get you to shop for it in your supermarket. And it's Labor Day, recognizing workers. That's you. More than 155 million people 16 and older were in the nation's labor force as of June. Celebrate yourself over the barbecue, grill some chicken, and kill two birds with one stone. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. What's left of Isaac is dribbling down out over the southeastern United States today, having brought with it wind and lots of water. We'll check in with our Missouri rancher Ken Lennox in just a minute about the benefits of a little bit of rain in the middle of a long, dry spell. First, though, oysters in New Orleans. Sal Sanseri runs P&J Oysters down in the Crescent City. We had him on Monday before Isaac hit. Thought we'd call him back up now that most of it's gone. Sal, good to talk to you again.
Glad to be here.
So, well, and you're there, right? I mean, that's a plus.
Well, exactly. It certainly could have been a whole lot worse.
So what was it like? I mean, did you guys lose power? How much business did you lose? You know.
Well, last day of business was Monday, so we went to work yesterday for a little bit. There were a few people open, surprisingly, but we don't have a lot of product. So that's going to be the interesting follow-up of the tale that will be told for this latest storm.
But talk to me about the oysters. I mean, can you get out there and look around and see how they're doing?
No, not yet. They will probably, because the winds are still up. So I would venture to say either tomorrow or the next day when the wind dies down that we'll be able to kind of get an idea what's up. Everything's closed right now. The state health department automatically shuts down after a storm like this.
Right. So the all the oyster beds and all the fishing and all that stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Are you hearing anything from restaurateurs and stuff about people wanting to get back into business and coming to you?
Well, yeah. Like I said, yesterday we sold just a little bit, a couple of restaurants. And today, you know, it was, I'd say, about 12 restaurants were open, you know, ready to roll. And by Monday, they're all going to be demanding oysters, and we will have a limited supply. But, yeah, they're wanting oysters. Yeah.
When you can finally get back in business, how long is it going to be before you're up at full production?
Again, it goes back to whether or not we open up Louisiana, because we cannot get Texas oysters right now because we certainly rely on our neighbors, but they don't have any. They have a red tide situation.
Oh, man.
Alabama and Mississippi don't have any. Now, Florida might have some for us that could help through this time.
Yeah. How much does, I guess we're going on, what, 4 days out of business, going on five now? How much is this going to cost you?
It's going to cost quite a bit. It all depends on when we're going to be able to get Louisiana product.
Do Louisiana oysters taste better?
Always. You know that. You've been here.
I have. It's been a long time, but I have. Well, good luck to you, Sal. Sal Sinceri at P&J Oysters in New Orleans. Sal, thanks a lot.
Appreciate you guys.
Today is a happier day than yesterday for a lot of people in the lower Midwest, farmers and ranchers in particular. This year's drought has been devastating for them. Ken Lennox is a fifth-generation rancher in Rolla, Missouri, where I'm pleased to say the weather has changed for the better. We had him on a couple of times this summer, and last we talked, he hadn't had a good rain since March. Mr. Lennox, good to talk to you again.
Yes, sir. Good talking to you.
So let me ask you this. You had rain.
Yes, we did. First good one in a long time, and it looks like we got more coming. We checked the gauge here a little while ago, and we had an inch and a half already, so that's helping.
That must be great, but here's the thing. Is it enough?
Well, no, it's not near enough. We need a long soaking rain today, and we need one next week and the week after that. And we need runoff from that, not a slow, easy rain, but a good hard one to bring the ponds up.
Right. How are the cows, or cattle, I guess you call them?
The cattle are doing fine. We've having to start feeding hay, which I've never done in August or September before.
When do you usually have to start haying?
In January.
Wow.
Normally, October, November, and December, I have stockpiled grass. You know, we'll not let any cattle in on a pasture for several months. So that carries me through into the new year, usually.
Yeah, I bet. Now, when you go down into town to, you know, pick up groceries or supplies or whatever it is, and you get to talk to people at the coffee shop or whatever, what are they saying?
Well, we're trying to help each other. That's how I found out where some of my hay was from my neighbors, you know.
Hmm.
They either didn't need all of it. We went clear over into western Missouri and brought back four big loads this week.
All right, help me out. Is that a long way from where you are?
A long way, 200 miles.
Wow.
It's 200 miles both ways. The last way back was the hard one.
Yeah, with all the hay in the truck, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so last time we talked to you, or maybe the first time, I guess, you sounded, you're a little depressed, right? I think you were a little down about the whole thing. Are you feeling better now?
Oh, the rain always makes you feel better. I actually got wet this morning, and not from taking a bath or a shower. It was, you know, it was raining enough, and I did not start out with a raincoat, so I just enjoyed getting damp.
Yeah, I bet. What's the weather forecast?
More rain through, possibly through Sunday. It depends on how Isaac does, but it's giving it to us. I feel sorry for the people down on the coast, but
yeah.
Every time they get one down there, so it usually comes on up, and this one's doing us a great favor. 3, 4, 5 inches, it'll just stay with us.
So far, so good. I hope you get what you need, Mr. Lennox.
Oh, I do too. I sure do.
All right, sir. Take care. Ken Lennox in Rolla, Missouri. He's a cattle rancher there. Been one for his whole life, I guess. Mr. Lennox, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You can see pictures of Ken Lennox and his cows, or his cattle, I guess, at marketplace.org. We're halfway, more or less, through the 2012 political convention season, and we get that all the balloons and the fanfare and the confetti can be distracting. But the actual point of these things, don't forget, is that the parties officially nominate somebody to be president. So with that in mind, this next story is about that particular status, being the nominee, and how that might affect somebody's future, even if they lose. Forget the convention bump. We asked Marketplace's Chrissy Clark to look into whether or not there's a nominee bump.
Where do presidential candidates go to make money after a campaign's over? Speaking fees are at the top of the list. But does anyone care if you were the actual nominee rather than just one of many contenders?
Yeah, they would be more desirable because of their sticker experience.
Kelly Bodway is with Key Speakers Bureau. She says that speaker fee,
it's tiered according to the level of politics that they get to.
Of course, if the speaking circuit isn't your thing, you could always host your own talk radio show. In that case, it's not about how far you get in the race to presidential nominee, but what happens while you're trying to get there. Mike Harrison publishes Talkers, a radio industry magazine. He says it's no accident Mike Huckabee was the one who got his own lucrative talk show after the last election.
I think that Huckabee came out of that election in really good shape. I think McCain, on the other hand, even though he did win the nomination, his luster was tarnished.
But McCain's nomination polished the resume of one of his senior campaign advisors. Doug Holtz-Eakin says his career has been helped by the fact that McCain was the actual nominee. If he'd just been another candidate,
it would have made a little difference, but nothing like having the attention and the ability to meet so many different people that comes with while traveling with the nominee.
So that's the upside, and that's a huge upside.
Jim Pinkerton was a senior advisor with Mike Huckabee's rather shorter campaign. He admits he would have liked the extra connections you get in the last stretch of the campaign trail.
The downside is that it'll last another 6 months. You gain weight, you don't get sleep, your credit cards don't get paid. It's a taxing lifestyle.
And if you're not going to end up in the White House anyway, maybe it's nice to finish that stuff up a little early. I'm Chrissy Clark from Marketplace.
A moment now for what I'll grant you in advance is a bit of cognitive dissonance, a discourse on materialism, pop music, and Korean income inequality. There's a music video that's blowing up on YouTube right now. You might well be one of the 75 million people who've clicked on it, or maybe you've heard it on the radio in Korean. It's called Gangnam Style by the Korean pop sensation Psy, and it's exactly the kind of silliness you might expect to go viral on YouTube. But Marketplace's Queen of Kim says there is some serious stuff inside.
Paul Kim is a Korean-American comedian in Los Angeles who's still trying to wrap his head around the popularity of Gangnam Style. He says he was driving the other day and heard it on a mainstream radio station.
After Usher and before Jay-Z, they played Gangnam Style all in Korean.
Oppan Gangnam Style.
My wife and I were like, what is going on right now?
Gangnam is a wealthy enclave in Seoul. It's like Beverly Hills meets Las Vegas. Rich 20-something guys dress up in ostentatious tuxes, blowing thousands of dollars at nightclubs. And image-conscious women shop at some of the world's most luxurious boutiques. In the video, Psy rides his imaginary horse through the decadence, and he's always surrounded by hot women.
If it was just a song about bling, it wouldn't be appealing to me.
Suk Jung Hong is a Korean-American writer, and she says Gangnam Style is a sly satire.
I feel like it has a double meaning as a song that really pokes fun at a lot of the tropes of the wealthy.
Hong says Gangnam Style is a send-up of American hip-hop, where a common conceit is for rappers to boast about their neighborhoods.
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of Compton, a brother with his finger on the trigger.
While rappers offer a commentary on urban poverty, Psy, who's from Gangnam, is commenting on his hood's over-the-top consumption. Gangnam represents about 3% of the country's population, but
actually, in 2010, 40% of Seoul's stocks, bonds, and investments were concentrated in Gangnam.
The growing income inequality is creating an Occupy-like conversation in Korea. Ki-young Park is a professor in the East Asian Studies Department at UCLA.
1% of people, they occupy the wealth, and what about 99%?
Well, the 99%, they sure like Psy. Hit it.
Oppan Gangnam Style.
I'm Queen of Kim for Marketplace. Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, which starts a little bit like this.
I've got Mr. Obama sitting here, and I just was going to ask him a couple questions.
Clint Eastwood last night, of course, at the Republican National Convention, among the more unusual convention speeches in memory. It was, though, the water cooler conversation today, but really, the empty chair was the star of the thing, right? So we reached out for some trained furniture expertise. John Farrell is the owner of Creative Metal and Wood. That's a furniture maker in North Carolina. Mr. Farrell, good to talk to you.
Yes, sir.
So did you see the Clint Eastwood speech last night?
I did. Yes, sir, I did.
And you saw that chair sitting there, and you're like, wow.
I saw it. It was more of a bar stool or a counter stool than a chair.
Which is funny, because everybody's making jokes about the empty chair today.
Well, it was a good shtick, I think, is the way you say it.
Yeah. Now, as a furniture professional, can you tell me what kind of chair that was? I mean, can you look at it and say that's...
It's what you would call commercial, low quality.
Well, now, how much do you think the Republican National Committee paid for that chair?
That was donated. It had to be. I doubt if they paid anything for it.
Do you think, given Mr. Eastwood last night, there's going to be a boom in people wanting just a single empty chair to buy?
I don't think so.
Fair enough. Fair enough. John Farrell, he owns a company called Creative Metal and Wood. It's down in High Point, Thomasville, actually, North Carolina. Mr. Farrell, thanks so much for your time, sir.
You're welcome.
It was crazy, man. If you haven't seen it, find it on YouTube. It's worth it. All right, we're done. Today, the Dow bounced about 90 points, 2/3 of 1%. The NASDAQ rallied 18 points, a little more than 0.5%. The S&P 500 tacked on 7 points, about 0.5%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Sitara Nieves. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. JJ Yore is the vice president and general manager. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, why some people think it's about time that government got out of the college business.
We're seeing people having to pay way too much for way too little education that's of value, and way too many people paying for things that they ultimately either aren't motivated enough to finish or unable to finish.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you back here on Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend, will you? This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.